changing. We're flying high, creating a complaint-free world. No more, no more complaining people. Their lives are changing. We're flying high, creating a complaint-free world. No more, no more.
So we're actually up to part number 4, Drop Stress, Gain Focus, which is part 4, Dr. Jekyll, We Must Hyde. I just went blank on who wrote. I'm thinking of Sinclair Lewis, and I know that's not right, and I know it's not Lewis Carroll. It is. Anyway, it's in my notes. That's right. Robert Louis Stevenson in 1835 lay down, and he had a nightmare as he was sleeping. And in the nightmare, he dreamed that a man, a very normal man, such as himself, became a homicidal maniac killer. And he then woke up and immediately grabbed the pen and paper and wrote Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, and Mr. Hyde is the basis of so many other movies and books. This idea of a relatively normal person transforming into something that's a monster. I'm thinking that that's probably where the concept of the Wolfman came from, the werewolf. This idea of a very, very normal person who actually inside has this monster. And I bring this up when it comes to mindfulness to let you know that we all have a Mr. Hyde inside of us. I think the Dr. Jekyll resonated so much with people because this idea that we've had for decades of the angel on one shoulder and the devil on the other shoulder. As human beings, we can relate very, very well to this idea of having two minds, of having two selves, of having the good self and the bad self, the happy self and the dark self. I think it was Don Miguel Ruiz who tells the story of a young boy talking to his grandfather, and he asked his grandfather about the nature of humanity, and the grandfather responds with words to the effect of, within every person is two wolves. One is this noble animal that would die for its family and would protect others. And then you've got the wolf that is only out for itself. You've got the wolf that is frightened, craven, the wolf that doesn't care about other people and their needs, only cares about what's important for himself or herself. And the young grandson says, which wolf wins if we have two wolves within us? And the grandfather responds with, whichever wolf you feed. This idea of the bilateral nature of human beings is something that's gone on for so long. I truly believe that that's where the idea of the devil came from. Someone gave me a quote one time that said, the devil was created by human beings so they would have someone else to blame. Let me say that again. The devil was created by human beings so they would have someone else to blame. Long before Flip Wilson popularized it, this is true. My mother would say, why did you do such a thing? And I would say, the devil made me do it. And I meant it sincerely. I mean, I went to church and was told that the devil made you do bad things, even as a little boy. And so I said, well, the devil made me do it. I had no choice. I'm not culpable. So we want this idea of blaming others. Willow says it's a plus minus universe. I get it. Yes. Human beings love to deal in polarities. As celebrities are coming up, and I've told you I've been hooked on celebrity memoirs lately, celebrity biographies and autobiographies, and I've read probably a dozen. I just finished Elton John's yesterday, and now I'm reading Cassandra Livingston's, who was Elvira, the Mistress of the Dark. She is a fascinating and very funny person. Anyway, as you're going along, I realized that people are treated on their path to becoming celebrities always the same. First, they're ignored. They can't get arrested. They can't get in the paper. They can't get noticed. And then when people in the media began to write stories about these people, the people in the media are always nice and sweet because they write what are called fluff pieces. They're wanting to fluff up the image of the person. They're trying to make them look good. Then over time, after the media has made the person look good, they realize that there's no money in look good stories anymore for that particular person. They realize that now what's important is salacious stories, stories about how that person has fallen from grace, stories of how that person has done bad things, or taking what normally has been a good performance and then just raking it over the coals, looking for what is bad. It is a bilateral approach to human beings and to their careers. And the same is true when we look at ourselves. The reason that human beings have survived this long is that they are ego-based entities. The reason that human beings have survived this long is that they are loving human beings, loving entities, loving beings. I say that because I realize those are dichotomous, dialectical for sure, because we need to remember that we are at the same time Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. We are the sweetest, nicest person, and we would go out of our way to help someone else. We see stories all the time on Reddit and Facebook of people who have been just so magnanimous when they themselves didn't have a whole lot. Human beings are giving, loving, and sweet. And at the same time, human beings are snippy, snarky, want theirs before everybody else. And that is the ego. That is the ego. The ego, not Freud's ego. Freud talks about the ego, superego, and the id. In this case, we're talking about that human self, that separated self, that part that is fearful because it knows or feels that it is separated from divine source energy. And because of that separation, that ego, that negative side of us, causes us to act and react fearfully. Because we feel that things are limited. We feel that there's not enough. And so we push ahead of other people. We criticize other people because we are afraid that ourselves are not strong enough as we are. And so we feel like that we'll somehow feel better about ourselves by criticizing other people. It's really kind of an amazing concept, don't you think? For many, many years, because the ego is something that was written a lot about by Neil Donald Walsh in Conversations with God. Abraham Hicks talks about it. A lot of people. It's become very, very popular over the years. So a lot of speakers, a lot of ministers have talked about killing your ego or getting rid of your ego. I don't believe that is neither possible, nor do I believe it is beneficial. Here's why. Your ego is a part of you. Your negative, fearful self is a part of you. And I think the best way to think of it is as a spoiled 2 or 3 year old child, a spoiled toddler. Nothing is ever good enough. Nothing ever lasts long enough, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Nothing lasts long enough. I'm sorry, some of the great comments that are coming in, I'm just seeing here. So nothing is good enough. It's very critical. When you're complaining, you're in your ego mind. The ego sees lack, whereas the source mind or the divine mind, the higher consciousness, sees plenty. The ego sees things to complain about, and source mind sees things to be grateful for. So the ego actually is part of what sustains us. It is what keeps us alive. And not only that, by having that ego to struggle against, it's what makes us stronger spiritually. Think about that. evangelical Christians will often say that God places temptations in front of you to test your faith. Well, you could say it kind of the same way here. And that is that without any struggle to act from our highest self, we don't become stronger spiritually. My Reddit channel seems to get filled up with people having meltdowns in restaurants. I saw a woman this morning throwing hot soup at a person because she was mad because the soup was too hot. Those are people who are living totally from their ego. People who learn to be gracious with other people, to understand that other people are indeed doing the best they can. Those are people who are moving towards their higher spiritual self. I bring all this up within the context of dropping stress and gaining focus because it is impossible to drop stress if you are caught in your ego mind, if you are caught in your fearful mind. And for many of us, we don't know that that's what it is. We just think that that is life. I grew up in a family that was so ego-based. And by that, again, I don't mean think they're great. Anything in this case, the ego typically tells you you're terrible, you're worthless, you're no good. This type of ego. It's not something that causes you to be inner bragging, to do inner bragging. But I grew up in such a family that was so ego-based, so fearful, so not enough, which is so funny because we're one of the wealthiest people as I was growing up that I knew. We were so wealthy, and yet we were so afraid. I can remember my mom bought so many Christmas presents for me and my two brothers that she didn't even bother to wrap them. She just put them in huge piles, and I do mean piles. I'm not talking like six or seven toys. I'm talking 30, 40, and TVs and dirt bikes and all this kind of stuff. And I can remember walking out and immediately looking at my stuff, because it was in the middle, I was the middle kid, and going, oh, how great, and then comparing it to my brother's stuff, and that's the ego. The ego is always comparing you to other people, typically comparing you unfavorably. So one of the aspects of dropping stress and gaining focus is to realize that you've got what I call a rude roommate who lives in your head. You've got this ego that is going to focus on what is wrong, that is going to find the bad thing in the good things. And we need to begin to, first of all, recognize it. And if we fight with the ego, which sometimes can be beneficial, but if we fight to it too much, we end up empowering it even more because the ego knows all your hot buttons, knows all your secrets, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So the ego, the issue with the ego, is that it is always there telling you what is wrong and what is missing. And if you didn't have that, you wouldn't strive for better. So think of it that way. You wouldn't strive for better if you didn't have that critical voice. The question is, are you striving for better or are you living in your ego? I chose to discontinue a relationship with someone recently because this person was always in victim. They were trapped in victim. And that's what ego is. Ego traps you in victim. Ego causes you to look for why the universe is always going to come down on you, why you're cursed, etc. This whole belief in curses, I think, is very, very destructive because it can be very disempowering to people. You have a lot more power in your life than you ever imagined. So begin to think of it that way. And when you hear and feel these negative, frightening things in your life, know that that's just your ego. It's not the truth of who you are. Practice mindfulness to overcome it. I wanted to share all of these things leading up to actually sharing with you mindfulness practices over the next several days. So get an idea that you've got this rude roommate. It's always going to be there. It is turned on by righteous, self-righteous anger. It is turned on by the media, and it's always there. It's up to you to control it, and it is up to you to replace it with higher thoughts. You know what the higher thoughts are. Replace the ego's commentary with the higher thoughts. Give you a good example. I was sitting by the pool on Christmas Day. Where I live is packed right now because all the tourists are down here for Christmas and the New Year. So the place was absolutely packed. And there was a guy sitting next to me, and he pulled out one of those little speakers and decided that his playlist is what everybody was going to listen to. And that's a hot button for me because I see people do that at airports and things like that. And that's one of the reasons I always use headphones, and specifically noise canceling headphones. I don't want other people to have to listen to whatever book I'm listening to or whatever. But the guy turns the music on and my ego went, oh God, here we go. It's going to be a bunch of crap I don't want to listen to. He played some of the coolest songs. He played some Christmas music that I had never heard before that I really liked. And the other thing was he didn't turn it up very loud. So my ego jumped in and went, rah, 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 rah. And then my higher self said, you know, this guy's on vacation. He is here to have a good time. Part of having a good time is listening to your music with your wife. So let him have that time. Let him enjoy that time. I get this place quiet all the time. See, that's rising above your ego. It's been said that the ego always speaks first and the ego always speaks loudest. I think that is in A Course in Miracles. The ego speaks first and the ego speaks loudest. So that's how to know if it's your ego or your higher self. Something stressful happens. If it goes, rah, 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 that's your ego. If it goes, let's see what we can do about this or how we can work it out, that's your higher self. Make sense? Never goes away. You always got it.
No more, no more complaining people. Their lives are changing. We're flying high, creating a complaint-free world. No more, no more complaining people. Their lives are changing. We're flying high, creating a complaint-free world. No more.